Good evening, dear ones, and welcome to each of you. Let us begin in prayer. In the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, God immanent, indwelling, the holy living Trinity, in whom we live and move and have our being. And so it is. And when I looked out upon each of you and saw all of these points of light, it brings into awareness that we abide in the light as light. And if we could only see it, all of these sparks are always around us, enlivening us. That field, that energy that Ilya spoke about last week is really real. And we can know it together. So tonight, as we approach All Saints Day, we are entering into a season of remembrance, a remembrance of all those who are in the conscious circle of humanity, who hold a special place in our lineage in particular. To all the saints and the teachers who have gone before us, opened the door for us, shown us the way, given us their lives. They have released and emanated an enormous amount of energy, and doubtless they still are. So we owe them a great deal for this. Tonight we honor and celebrate the life of G.I. Gurdjieff, whose death was on October 29, 1949. And our opening reflection comes from an exchange between Beelzebub and his grandson, Hussein, from Mr. Gurdjieff's epic book, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. Chapter 7, which is entitled Becoming Aware of Genuine Being Duty. Hussein, the grandson, is in conversation with his grandfather and says, "I, for instance, have already existed so many years in this universe, and yet the thought has never entered my head that perhaps there was a time when everything I see and have did not exist, that everything was not born with me like my nose. And so, my dear and kind grandfather, since your conversation with the captain has gradually made me aware of all of this with the whole of my presence, the need has arisen in me to make clear to my reason why I personally have these advantages and what obligations I am under on their account. It is just because of this that there now arises in me a process of remorse." And having said this, Hussein bowed his head and became silent. Looking at him affectionately, Beelzebub begins to speak as follows. "Only when you reach the corresponding period of your existence for becoming aware of such essence questions and reflect upon them actively, will you understand what you must do in return. So in the meantime, exist as you exist. Only do not forget one thing. At your age, it is indispensable that every day when the sun rises, while watching the reflection of its splendor, you bring about a contact between your consciousness and the various unconscious parts of your common presence. Trying to make this state last, think and convince the unconscious parts, as if they were conscious, that if they hinder your general functioning in the process of ordinary existence, then in the period of your responsible age, they will not only be unable to enjoy the good that is proper to them, but also your whole presence, of which they are a part, will not be capable of becoming a good servant of our common, endless Creator, and will thus be unable to pay honorably for your rising and existence. So, my dear friends, may it be so that we are a good servant who pays honorably for our arising and leave this planet at the appropriate time with having paid honorably for our arising and existence. Amen. So now we place ourselves, we who are doubtless of responsible age, we place ourselves under the benign canopy of the work, and in the stillness of our own inner being, with tranquility of presence, we come together tonight with the invitation to intentionally create together a sacred receptacle of higher influences. And we do this by deep listening, trying to remove distractions, removing clutter, perhaps lighting a candle, which I know many of you already have, removing your shoes. And thus we begin with back upright and heart open, mind in directed attention. We breathe. We breathe in deeply. All every most hidden part of our being. We embrace all being, everything. Everything that may need to be assured, that is hurt, that may seem dark or confused, harsh, shameful, ugly, irreparably damaged, diseased, unforgiving and unforgivable, resistant, apathetic, everything. Everything in the whole pain body of creation, all affirming, all denying, and we carry it and hold it as offering. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being, our very being, as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as the beloved. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this heating, radiant light into the world, all worlds, we hand over the complexities of this day and the plans for tomorrow, all the anxieties and small fears of our hearts. We lay down our constructed life in order to yield and reveal the divine human life, and we stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. And we will now enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina. And we will share the reading on the screen, which comes from today's email. And it will be read 3 times. We have come to know and to believe in the love God has for us. God is love, and whoever remains in love remains in God, and God in him. We love because God first loved us. I am the light shining upon all things. I am the sum of everything, for from me everything has come, and toward me everything returns. Pick up a stone and there I am. Split a piece of wood and you will find me there. Within and without, the core energy of the universe, love, unifying and transcending, relating and cohering, becoming and unfolding towards fullness, alive. We have come to know and to believe in the love God has for us. God is love, and whoever remains in love remains in God, and God in him. We love because God first loved us. I am the light shining upon all things. I am the sum of everything. For from me everything has come, and toward me everything returns. Pick up a stone and there I am. Split a piece of wood and you will find me there. Within and without, the core energy of the universe, love, unifying and transcending, relating and cohering, becoming and unfolding towards fullness, alive. we have come to know and to believe in the love God has for us. God is love, and whoever remains in love remains in God, and God in him. We love because God first loved us. I am the light shining upon all things. I am the sum of everything. For from me everything has come, and toward me everything returns. Pick up a stone and there I am. Split a piece of wood and you will find me there. Within and without, the core energy of the universe, love, unifying and transcending, relating and cohering, becoming and unfolding toward fullness, alive. And so it is. So I invite you, as you are moved to do so, to bless all of us by sharing what you received from this passage, for the image, the thoughts of your hearts as we begin our time together. Marcia, please.
Hi. Hi, Marcia. For so long, I have believed that there was a part of me that did not know love at all, because my mother was mentally ill, and I had read or heard from therapists that if you didn't know a mother's love, you can't love. And I have heard these words so many times, the abide in me. But today, what I heard was, we love because God first loved us. And I know I can, I do love, but I always felt that my love part was missing somehow. And this is huge. Thank you.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Marcia. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Thank you. Pamela or Michael or both.
Michael clicks the button. There are passages in this from that central passage from the Gospel of Thomas that I was bringing into myself, putting myself into the first person of that. I am the light shining upon all things. I mean, in the context of affirmations, I mean, probably if I spent the rest of my life with that as an affirmation, much would happen. Much would happen that wouldn't without that. And then it went on to say, everything from me, everything has come. And toward me, everything returns. And I heard in that, from me, everything has come. That is the subjective reality of my world. From me, the meaning, the perception, my experience is not objective, it is subjective. And so from me, everything is coming. And to me, everything returns. And that's like the karmic return of experience and engagement with the world. So anyway.
Thank you for that, Michael. Thank you. Yeah. Steve, please.
Yeah, I think it was a couple years ago. No, it was 4 years ago that we used to do these trips up into the Boundary Waters between Minnesota and Canada. It's this beautiful country, and we would typically go Labor Day weekend, and it was right after the mosquitoes had gone. And you almost had all the lakes to yourself, and you could explore across the border and back and forth and find the best fishing and all of that. And I took a couple of Tom's friends. These were these triplet guys that he used to hang with. And one of them was away on active duty in the Marines and couldn't join us, but we took him on this trip, and it was the older guys, the dads with their sons, and then me with these two-thirds of a triplet team, and sitting around the campfire. And it was the shared experience and how spirituality and the presence of the immanence connects to men. And we talk about, the divine feminine a lot, but the divine men, a lot of men can't find their way to it unless they see it through nature. Unless they see it through the imminence of things and how small they become relative to the immenseness of what they're within. Mm-hmm. And I could tell this impacted these two guys, and they keep talking to me about it years afterwards. It just was like this world opened for them. And so that's, I think, of the relating ground. I was involved in a thing with Andrew Harvey and Mirabai Star. It's a mystic thing I'm taking. And one of the women that spoke up in that sharing session says, I don't know how to introduce my husband to spirituality. He won't go along with me. And I just kept saying in my head, just take him into nature. And it'll yield, his heart will yield to that. So that's what I have to share. Thanks. Ah,
indeed. His heart will yield. May it be so for each of us. So thank you for those rich sharings. What a blessing for us to begin the evening. And so now we will turn to our topic of allness and the new cosmology. And I am very pleased to welcome Brian Graham with us this evening. Brian is a participant in the Journey School, an oblate of the Church of Conscious Harmony, and he serves on the board of the Center for Christogenesis. So Brian will continue to illumine Ilya's teaching, as well as to accompany us in our sharing and responses. So welcome, Brian. So good to have you with us this evening.
Thank you, Marianne. It's very, very good to be here. If you read the Mark this month, there's an article in there I wrote about a little of my own experience with these ideas and this new cosmology that I first encountered in 2009. And it's a long and winding journey, as they all are, but you know, I had an experience where I saw this undivided wholeness. I felt it, I experienced it. But when I came back to ordinary consciousness, I had no vocabulary for it. I had no way to really understand what had happened. And in the CCH library, where we have the books of the late brother Wayne Teasdale, I was in a meeting one night, turned around, and there were two books on the shelf right next to each other. And I don't know if they grabbed my attention or I grabbed theirs. That was just, there they were. And one was Albert Einstein's Theory of Relativity by Albert Einstein. Strange book to be in the CCH library, it seemed. And right next to it was David Bohm's Wholeness in the Implicate Order. And my spiritual journey took a turn into what was seemed to be physics, quantum mechanics, and all these topics that were new and strange to me. And I had no idea at the time, really, that there was anyone who had connected those ideas with Christianity until I discovered Ilya Dalio. And one day a couple of years ago, I was talking to Peter about all this. And he said, well, Ilya needs someone to join her board. Maybe you'd be a good fit. I wasn't anxious to join another board. That's a very serious responsibility. I didn't want to just jump at anything. So I said, well, I'll keep an open mind. I'll talk to her. And so I remember the phone call on my calendar. I set aside 15 minutes with Ilya. And as you might guess from last week, there's no 15 minutes with Ilya. We talked for almost an hour. And the love of Christ, the love of God, the joy, the wholeness, it all just radiated through the phone. I was immediately taken. And we talked and talked and talked about these ideas. I happily joined the board. And I definitely feel that reciprocal maintenance, that what she was talking about last week about herself and the computer, that I love the Center for Christogenesis. It loves me back. It feeds me. The more it feeds me, the more love. It's just this beautiful thing. So I'm very happy that tonight we get to break down some of this. I have less than 82 slides, which is the good news. And I would love to just start by hearing from more of you. I know some of you shared on Sunday about your experiences, your impressions, emotional responses to Ilya's teaching. So I'd love to open the floor and just hear from some of you to share that as a community with all of us. Any questions, also welcome. Karen, please.
So I shared with regards to the idea of a cyborg back when I was in the session with Ilya, and I shared that with her. Something occurred to me after her session, though, that hadn't. I've had a challenging time with this new hip. In terms of pain and full recovery, like lots of it is going really well, but there's just this one sticking point that just doesn't seem to want to heal. And I have focused on the titanium and ceramic and plastic as being this artificial thing that's inside of me, and you know, now I'm stuck with it and things like that. But what I realized after the call with Ilya is that it's alive too. Like I haven't even considered it an integral part of my body because it's artificial and it's separate. And it might vibrate at a different level. I mean, titanium doesn't vibrate at the same level as human cells, but there's something in me now that feels hopeful about it becoming a living part of my body, or being a living, it's probably a living part of my body already because my bone has already healed all around it. So there's something in my attitude towards it now that has completely shifted, and my sense of being able to fully heal and be whole again as a human being. Like all of me is human, even that titanium piece that is embedded in my bone now. And I feel that at a very deep level since hearing Ilya speak about everything having life, all matter. Titanium is matter, plastic is matter, ceramic is matter.
It is. To me, that brings up, for whatever reason, the whole idea of the Eucharist, you know, that it wasn't just a piece of grape and some wheat, you know, it was something that was combined effort. It was a mixture, something humans created. That's the gift. And this integration that she points to is where it seems so strange. It's like, how can me and a piece of metal coexist? What's going on there? It all harmonizes in some way that is beyond explanation, maybe even beyond understanding, but it's there. There's something about this union and co-creation that's just fundamental, and it's part of all that, including your experience. In fact, I'm reminded Teilhard, when he was a priest originally in France, and then he was sent to China in the desert where it wasn't legal to be Christian. There was nobody else that was Christian. There was no communion table, no elements, nothing. And he did communion on the world. He just made the whole thing his communion elements. Karen, do you have your hand up again?
I do.
Okay, great.
No one was raising it. So Valerie shared on Sunday about the heart and not really focusing on the heart. And I appreciated that about this. And what I've come to with regards to that is that the heart is matter. It is our physical heart. That is where the consciousness is. Like it's not this emotional, I'll just use the word emotions because that's what I get hung up on with. That's not love. So it is the love here for me is everything that animates matter, and our physical heart is matter. And that's where I feel the heart being brought into this is the matter of the heart. But I wanted to share that as well. Okay, there's a lot of people sharing now, so I can stop.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Steve, please.
Well, I keep coming back to this. I keep locking into this one theme, and that is this whole idea of eschatology in Christianity, the second coming. That, and I had to struggle with it with the scripture this past week in the homily, because and it never made sense to me. God sends his only son into the world, and then there's got to be a do-over later. That didn't make sense to me. That it seemed that Jesus was sent, and we were, as Paul said in Romans, to be conformed in his image. And then, so it's more, it's on us to carry forward. And then it happens where we have periods in our culture where we rise to the occasion and we're aligned with the divine, and then it gets stale, and then entropy sets in, and we get into our whole sensory experience and we lose it. And then we then wake up, we recognize we lost it, and therein comes a second coming. And Nicol went over that in the Mark at the consummation of the age. It's consummation of the ages. We rise and we fall. And I'm hoping that we're in a phase where we're recognizing the imminence of God and nature and protecting it and our role and maintaining it and nurturing each other and the kenotic feel that comes from that of giving back and service and connecting to each other rather than the zero-sum game of clutching what you have. So, and that's that quantum integration, that experience that Ilya talks about. And so it just, once it starts vibrating with you, it's hard to shake it.
Thank you, Steve. Begumans.
It's me again. There are a couple of things. One was getting clear that in Teilhard's model and Ilya's, that spirit is matter. I had always held spirit and matter as apart from one another. I guess our whole tradition has held those two things apart for thousands of years. And having seeing the spirituality of matter is, it was a meaningful revelation for me. And then there was something about her just cosmic perspective of everything that reminded me of a retreat that Bernadette gave years ago on Meister Eckhart. And I don't remember many of the details there, but there was this time when Bernadette was talking about Meister Eckhart's notion of, or his model of, the Godhead and the Trinity, and that the Godhead is the energy of God prior to Trinitarian unfoldment. And there was some German word that he had, but it was like the boiling over. I remember Bernadette talking about the boiling. It was the boiling over of the energy of God that then began to crystallize, if you will, into forms like beginning with the Trinity. And that image has always stuck with me, that there was the, and until last week, I was thinking that, oh yes, that the energy of God boiling over. But as I was thinking about that, that's still a dualistic thing or model. It's like there's God and God's energy boiling over. And something shifted last week, and it's like, oh, that is God, that is God energy. God energy boiling over into form, boiling over into creation, boiling over into matter. That energy being part and parcel of, embedded in, and a component of all matter. And then, so hang with me for another 60 seconds. So in the world of nuclear fission, right? So all these atom bombs that we've seen pictures of for 60, 70 years, you know, we split an atom, the smallest thing, and the energy that comes out of that little piece of matter is staggering. It was there all the time. We came up with some way to release that. And what amazing energy or spirit was embedded in these fine particles of matter. And I think, well, that's what we're made of. So the spirit of God or God energy, I am shot full of, and so are you and everybody else. Every particle of us is shot through with this God energy. What will release it? What will make us shine forth?
It's beautiful. Thank you. There's a few, as if I get to the slides, there's a few little points that you brought up that connect back. About light and energy, and we'll see kind of where that goes. It's very fascinating, and there's so much to really truly contemplate in these insights, truly contemplate, and the mysteries of science and the mysteries of God, they're the same, and we can approach it in that sense with this humility and wonder, the smallness that was spoken of earlier, that sense of holy awe. Paco.
I was so glad to hear Stephen bring up the idea of the second coming, because I've always had trouble with that as well. It's never been something I've been able to commit myself to. But that idea did arise when Ilya was sharing last week, because I've been reading leading up to this, ironically, I was reading Ken Wilber's book, A Brief History of Everything. And a lot of that is about evolution of consciousness. And it made me, suddenly it occurred to me that could it be, I wonder, if the presentation of Christ that we witnessed in Jesus was what we were able to, it was a stretch for us at that time and in that age to understand all the wisdom and the glory of Jesus the Christ. But as we evolve in our consciousness, 100,000 years from now, whenever it is, you know, could there be another coming that is another stage that we are finally ready for? I think I wonder about that. What could that be like? We're already so amazed at the first coming. What could the second coming be like if we're prepared?
There's a lot that synchronicity between that, what you're reading, and it runs through Thomas Keating, who of course had that same, used those insights to talk about the levels of consciousness within us, you know, the Typhonic, Eurobric, and mythic membership, mental egoic, unitive, that expansion of consciousness, and the idea that we're entering an axial age, something that Father Keating spoke of shortly before his passing. And that's what Ilya speaks of. It's this idea that we're on the threshold of something significant. And the evidence that we might look around and see that we think of as being contrary to that is just, as Ilya explains it, is just the counterforce. It's the reverse side of that upward movement. And, you know, I've been with her through this whole COVID experience and everything, all the chaos and turmoil that have been going on. And she just is so glad for that, because to her, that's so obviously the sign that we are on this movement toward that next great, you know, awakening or experience or unfolding revelation. Just like if you had a rocket going up into space, you've got to have a lot of smoke and heat and fire and noise coming out the other side. It's not possible to just have one without the other. So that's been extremely helpful to me as a metaphor. When I look at the world and I just see the smoke and the chaos and the noise and the fire, the kind of the ugliness or chaos, I can know that definitely for certain, there's also some metaphorical kind of rocket going up. There's some evolving consciousness happening all around us at exactly the same time, to exactly the same degree. I'm sorry, let's see, we have another hand. Christina, please.
Hi. I have a question. When she was talking about the integration of evil, she mentioned something where it was the dark side of God.
Yeah, it's the way that, so that idea, that's a bit, Art kind of unpacks it a little bit and she tries to tease it out further, but it's the idea that, similar to what I was just saying about the rocket, that if something moves in one direction, there's an equal and opposite movement in another, is one way to look at it. Or it's just looking from direction at our own evolution, our own movement. And so I don't know that I'm going to be able to explain this fully. There's a lot to ponder in it, but it's the idea that we see sin as sort of this other thing. Like, I want to be good. I want to be pure. I don't want to have any of that, you know, sort of like it's separate from me. But Thomas Keating has said that's the way God reaches us. So there's something important about it. There's something valuable about the parts of us that fall short. And they're somehow, for whatever reason, whatever purpose, they seem necessary to help us to move from that. And it's a huge idea for sure, but I think it starts somewhere around there. And it for Teilhard, another way that he approached it was he saw this happening at every level in evolution, every single stage, from the formation of how suns became suns and how planets were born and how then organic life began. And each stage of it, there's this, what you would call kind of a chaos and a crisis that seems to emerge. And it's that crisis and chaos that propels creation forward. And so he saw that idea and just completely rejected the idea of original sin, you know, that way that we all grew up with, and just saw, no, this is a fundamental part of the whole thing. We are the ones seeing it as separate. We're the ones seeing it as bad. And that doesn't mean he disregarded it at all. It just meant he saw it as part of the whole too, and a necessary part. Just like the exhaust coming out of the rocket, it's not the rocket at all. You'd never confuse it for the rocket, but it's necessary. And it's somewhere in that direction. That's what he's telling us. Thank you. Anyone else? Any questions, impressions, comments? All right. Well, I have a few slides that I wanted to share tonight as kind of our follow-up to a lot of what Ilya was saying, to just highlight a few key concepts, particularly around what we might call these love and energy. So I'm going to share my screen. And just highlight a few of the ideas, some of which she brought up and some of which are part of this whole vision of reality, of the world beyond what we can normally perceive, that comes to us from science, mostly physics. But each of these ideas is not presented to learn science. It's to learn about the nature of God in ourselves. And so I think each of these is worthy of true contemplation, just really reflecting on what might this be telling us about ourselves, about God, one another. And one of the first points, the main points, was that it's a relational universe. It's not a universe of separate objects floating around in empty space, colliding with each other and all of that. It's a relational universe. David Bohm divided wholeness in flowing movement. So it's not just ultimately one whole, it's moving. It's moving through space and time constantly. We have a feeling right now, each of us, of being still. The room around us appears to be still. And that's not actually the whole story. We're on a planet that's spinning on its axis at 1,000 miles an hour. We're rotating the sun about 26,000 miles an hour. We're moving in various dimensions. Our senses can't perceive it. Our minds can barely comprehend it. So we're not, but it's the reality that's here, this wholeness. And that enfolded order, that beautiful prayer that Marianne started us with, was referring to that enfoldment, that everything emerges from this, what is called the plenum, that wave aspect Michael was talking about. And it emerges from that, like this photograph here, which represents something dropped into a pond of water, and a little bit of water comes up, and this photograph kind of freezes it. So it looks like it's a separate object, something different from the water, maybe. And that's a metaphor or analogy of what it's like for all matter, including us. We're rising up temporarily from this plenum, this godness, existing for a time, go back into it. All matter is doing that, unfolding and dissolving back. And the particle wave nature that gave quantum physics its name, we know it applies to all the constituents of all matter, that there's this wave aspect and then this particle aspect, not separate. Michael mentioned a little bit too, this next point about energy and matter are not separate. They're connected, they're related, they're aspects of the same. Spirit and matter are not unrelated, they're connected. It's the manifestation of spirit is matter, as Ilya was telling us. And it's the same with mind and matter. It's not mind over matter. They're connected. There's a relationship with what we perceive matter to be, and it reflects back to us. Ilya once said, so sometimes say in board meetings, we're talking about the budget, and she'll just say some pearl of wisdom. It will just come out. And in one of those meetings, she said, I can't remember what we were even talking about, but she said, none of us really ever see reality. We only see what we're projecting from our minds onto matter, and it's reflected back at us exactly as we project it. That's a really powerful point to me. We talked about the fact that space and time are relative. That means they're just not fixed. There's no absolute space to the universe. There's no absolute time. And it all bends. We'll talk a little bit more about what it bends to. Ilya spoke about consciousness being relational. I know before my experience in 2009, I didn't quite see it before then, but the way I was applying the work principles, I was trying to fix me. There was this idea of me, and I could somehow just rearrange things and perfect things. I could become some more conscious version of me. I don't think that's so unusual, but I didn't realize how that's all, it's about me, it's a me project. And consciousness isn't in that direction. Ultimately, it's relational. It's in relation to our world around us, what we perceive. And that's a massive shift from the idea of an individual evolving somehow on their own, with no help, with no input, with nothing, just somehow by oneself, we're going to do this. I think it was the same Bernadette Roberts presentation where she also said there's no private revelation, which is the same idea. It's meant for all of us. Just like our sharing tonight, all these conversations are meant for all of us. We also talked about the observer effect, which was, you know, sometimes called the observer affects the observed, but there's still duality, like there's some separate observer and some separate object. And as we continue to look at that idea in science, it's the observer and the observed are just as enmeshed as everything else. Truly a relational universe. And this mysterious force of gravity, this is just, to me, so beautiful. And thinking about Kirchhoff and the law of seven, the laws of world creation, we start with a one, and then we get to a three. Let's reflect on that as we look at this, this beautiful picture is a star being born. It's in the Orion Nebula. And just think about the law of seven and this image and ponder what gravity has to tell us. So gravity was the first of the four fundamental forces to manifest in the Big Bang. The very first force that shows up was gravity, the one. And then three other fundamental forces appear shortly after that. Electromagnetism and the strong and the weak nuclear forces. But gravity was first. And gravity is a subtle power. It's the weakest of the four fundamental forces. Anytime you lift an object, you're resisting gravity. You lift your hand, you're resisting gravity. It's very weak, it seems, but it's relentless. And it's that attraction of matter to matter that created the whole universe, and space and time bend to it. In the picture, what we're essentially seeing is those clouds of gas that disperse, mostly hydrogen. That attraction of gravity draws the molecules together closer and closer and closer, relentlessly over eons, and it compresses them to the point where they're structure changes and they glow with light. That's the creative force of gravity from the very beginning of time. The physicist Brian Greene points out that we can shield ourselves from the other fundamental forces. We can shield ourselves from electromagnetism. We can rip apart atoms, tearing apart that strong nuclear force. We can wear lead vests to protect ourselves from radiation, but we can't hide from gravity. You can either only resist it or accept it. That's it. That's from a physicist. Resist it or accept it. Brian Swim, another author, just went so far as to say that gravity is love. And he points out the parallel between that subtle, relentless attraction of matter to matter that created the heavens. And that's love. That's there from the very beginning. And Pierre Teilhard de Chardin famously said, love is the fundamental force of the universe. That's what he means. He's talking about this fundamental force. And because he saw that through evolution, that was his lens to look at the whole, he saw that gravity was there from the beginning, and it was creating and creating, and that ultimately, as in the photograph here, in the case of those hydrogen atoms, as they come closer and closer and closer together, drawn together by gravity, they don't just become like sardines in a can. They transform, they evolve, they become the starry worlds. And the starry worlds evolve and they give birth to planets like our Earth, born from a little piece of sun that shot out. So that process he saw, and so that's part of how he saw God through evolution, was because he saw that attractive force of gravity all the way through, drawing together. Over and over, relentlessly, but gently. And then we have light. The Lectio prayer was filled with references to light. What is light? What we know about it, certainly not everything, not by a long shot. It's still mostly a mystery, but we know that its speed is constant and that everything else, space and time and energy and matter, they're all relative to light. Everything bends, but light is the constant. And gravity, strangely, so curiously, if there were nothing to resist gravity, nothing in the way like a planet or a body, gravity moves at exactly the speed of light. Light also has the particle wave nature. It's unmanifest in its wave form, and then there it is. And just like space and time bend to gravity, nothing moves faster than the speed of light. Einstein says in that little book I mentioned in the CCH library about relativity, that even if you were somehow able to get into a ship and move at the speed of light next to a beam of light, it wouldn't look like the light is standing still. It would still be moving away from you at the speed of light. I wonder when Jesus says that I am the light of the world, maybe that's not just metaphorical. Might that be literal? Email this week talks about two aspects of energy that Teilhard de Chardin says exist in all matter, including ourselves: radial and tangential energy. It's actually a typo, by the way, in the very first sentence of the email. It says radial and axial. I didn't catch that until this morning, so don't let that confuse you. It's radial and tangential energy. And Cynthia Bourgeot, in our annual reading, The Eye of the Heart, refers to these two energies in us, what they might mean. And basically what they mean is it's fairly simple to get the concept down, but the significance of it can be pondered and contemplated for quite some time. So the symbol at the bottom left of your screen shows what a radial line is and a tangential line. That's where Teilhard got the terms. A tangent is the horizontal. It's energy that, like the tangent of a circle, goes across, it goes out, it radiates outward, like the arms in the figure just above it. And Teilhard says that's the interactive energy of relationship to others, relationship to our environment, that energy that goes out beyond ourselves. And that's part of all matter. It's part of us as humans. We're exercising that tangential energy right now, having this conversation through electrons, computers. And that's energy of relationship is in everything. And there's also this energy that he calls radial. And that's like the radius of a circle. It starts at the very center of the thing. It starts in our very centers, in our case, and it radiates out to the farthest point, which you could call upward or outward or forward. Teilhard saw it as the movement against entropy. He saw it as this movement toward increasing evolution. And it's part of everything. At the same time as Teilhard saw this through evolution, there was a Ukrainian chemist who read his work and saw the exact same thing in organic chemistry, the same exact patterns of the tangential and radial energies at work, drawing creation closer together. Like we talked about with gravity, drawing us together. If we just give in, let ourselves be drawn together, then something gets created that goes up. And Teilhard saw that both of those energies working together drive evolution. The fact that one is horizontal and one is vertical, of course, brings up the cross as the symbol of those two energies intersecting, working together. In pondering this, my own experience, I think there was an idea before this that the vertical is good and the horizontal is just kind of bad, just kind of, yeah, that's just not really that important. And what Teilhard's saying is not that at all. It's, you can't get to the vertical without the energy of relationship, without that tangential energy. Last week when Ilya was teaching, because of schedule, I ended up being in New York City, a trip we'd planned months ago with our adult children. But I took that time, because I couldn't be there for the class, to go to Central Park, where Teilhard spent his final years, and went to the church on Park Avenue, where he spent his final time. And kind of went in and retraced his path. And if you go into the park from that church, there's only one street you can really go on, because the Museum of Art, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, takes up the other three blocks. So it's kind of that one way in. And if you go into the park from that street, 84th Street, there's athletic fields everywhere. There's playgrounds everywhere. There's these huge areas of gathering places, benches. It's filled with people. And that experience of his connection wasn't just to nature, it was to humans. It was that tangential energy of relationship that drew him and that led to that clear expression of the radial energy, the vertical energy. Those are the slides. I'll stop sharing. Comments, questions? Karen.
I guess I have a lot to say tonight. So matter is relational. You know, just reflecting back on what I said earlier about my hip and the titanium, like that's what I see needing to happen in my body, is for it to relate to each other in whatever, I don't know, capacity that it can. But the main thing is that it can, and that I can see it that way now. But the other thing is the light. I went with a friend of mine and walked down to our park down by the lake and this past weekend and looked up at the partially full moon still. It was still really large and beautiful. And one of the things that is just awe-inspiring to me is how looking at the light, all the different little lights in the sky, and recognizing that it's highly likely that whatever emanated that light no longer exists matter-wise. And if that's true about whatever star or planet or whatever it was that sent that light out in its light years, you know, however far into the future, and ended up in my eyes that night seeing it up in the sky, well, then that's likely what happens with us too when we die. Whatever our consciousness or light that's coming off of us, others, whatever other is, can probably see and detect us way out there. And that could be like the next life of this matter body is, you know, its light or its consciousness still emanating at way out into the future to some other entity's eyes or senses, whatever. They probably don't have eyes. It's some sense, some sensibility of theirs. And so I all of this is just awe-inspiring to me. And I love pondering the ideas and what it could mean, not only to this being right here, right now, this Karen being, but also all these beings that are still communicating with us. Just looking up into the night sky, they probably don't exist anymore, but they're still communicating with us. And it feels so relational. I feel so connected to everything because they're still sending themselves out to us to acknowledge. I don't know, they don't want us to acknowledge them. It's just, it's a way of relating to me. And I love that relationship, matter and relationship is what this is all about, and how light and gravity is all playing a part in it. So anyway, that's it.
No, that's beautiful. Steve.
Well, I think the radial really is the feminine, the divine feminine, and the tangential is the divine masculine. And I think and it's not necessarily personality-wise, it's just archetypal. And the masculine energy is to kind of push out into the world and solve problems and fix and do and go and do. And the radio energy is kind of more of a percolating love that flows centrifugally out into the world. So they're complementary energies, and we all have those energies within us. It's just, so we don't identify as feminine or masculine. It's, and if we're male, we tend to run that way, but there is a feminine energy we can activate within ourselves, and it actually complements us. It grows us, and it helps us grow that outward spirituality back to God. It is that transcendent field is a two-way street. We take it in and we give it back like breathing. And so I'm really fascinating with this new idea of not just the vertical dimension of, but incorporating the masculine horizontal tangential direction with the radial. So I'll stop there.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, that as you were sharing that, I kept picturing the image that was on the screen, both for the beginning of this night and the homework. It really looked like what you were describing. Catherine, please.
I was just really struck by you saying to contemplate the light literally, that Jesus is the light of the world, and contemplating that literally. And kind of gave me chills, because I've never really thought of it that way. And I like thinking of it that way, because light is always around. And so it's will be a constant reminder to me that that could be literal. And I like that.
Thank you. Gay, please.
Well, I have a lot of things swirling in my head right now. I hope I can formulate this the way I'm somewhat thinking it. Of all the things you said tonight, the one that stuck out the most for me was the image of the rocket going up and the chaos that's created as this upward movement, you know, creates this whirling, seemingly destructive energy. I find that so hopeful. And the fact that you said that Elia was thrilled with all this, I've had a sense of this for quite a while, and it is, I don't want to muddy the waters here with another author, but there's something that's connecting with Cynthia Bourgeau's idea. I don't remember, I think it's the chapter that she calls What Are We Here For? And she talks about God's Eros, that this love that we say God was primarily a yearning. It was not agape, it was eros. And it was our finitude, if you will, our humanness, our all of the things that the tragedies, the sadness, the fear, the shame, all of those things that with this eros somehow create goodness and kindness and love. So I see a connection there somehow with the tangential energy and the, what's the other one, the radial energy, that there is something created. And the reason I relate to this so much is I feel it in myself, this yearning. And she goes on to say that if everything just flows, if there's no, you know, bumping against things, there's nothing created. And so I somehow all of those ideas are somewhat related in my head. I'm going to have to digest them. Thank you.
You're welcome. And yeah, Cynthia and Ilya are friends, and they speak together, and they recently did a talk together on Zoom about a lot of these ideas. And it's very interesting to watch them at work together, sussing all this out, really talking about it in detail. I wish we were not almost out of time. I think we have time for one more share. Jeanette?
Well, I'm like Gay. These ideas are going around in my head, but and I'm not sure that I'm really coherent on this, but ever since since Sunday, when I heard Peter talk, and he was speaking of Austin in some way bringing a focus of all the energy that's coming, I had this idea in the 80s when I was working in the governor's office. I read that all the minerals in the world were located in Burnett County. And I said that can't be true because they're all named for locations all over the world where they're found, and they wouldn't all be there. So I went to the Bureau of Economic Geology and I talked with them, and they showed me the documentation and the minerals that had been found. Well, if I looked from the space station down at Earth, I would know that I couldn't find that county line that said this was Burnett County. And being so close to Burnett County, that full complement of minerals, all the building blocks of the universe, is located and concentrated in this area. And I'm thinking, like when Michael was talking about what would happen if love and that energy exploded at the microcosmic level. Well, what would happen if all the energy of the building blocks of the universe were concentrated here? How would that fit into Ilya's hypotheses and all of her teachings? It's, I think that we're given a great deal and we are called to use it.
We are given a great deal. It's amazing the treasures and the teachings and the teachers that have come to this little place in Austin, Texas. Amazing. Well, we're out of time, but I just wanted to end with a quick homework. So the homework is to try to experience that tangential energy in your interactions with others this week. See if you can feel that energy that Teilhard's describing. See if you can get a glimpse of the radial energy. Can you feel it? What does it feel like? How does it transform your interactions with others? Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. It feels wonderful. It feels enlivening. It feels expansive. It feels very good. Thank you. Your presence has been a great blessing for all of us. So, I have a closing word from Rodney Cullen. I'm not even sure we could take another word, but I'll go ahead because I think it's somewhat relevant. Our friend Rodney Cullen, who also resides in the communion of saints offers us. And by the way, this comes from a reading of his, The Mirror of Light. He wrote a great deal about light. To collect positiveness, we are to love people, really love them, just love them. Everyone is in need of love. It is spiritual food. When we love people, we give them our flesh and blood. Blood is emanation. Flesh means our real self. To love is not an emotion, nor a sensation, nor an idea. It is a particular kind of irradiation that only a certain type of action can produce in us. The only way to love our neighbor as ourselves is to learn how to communicate with God. Then we have the grace to love both our neighbor and ourselves. So I don't think it's too big a stretch to take that and connect it with what was offered this evening. And we know then and affirm and can pray aloud wherever we are. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how very blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.